All right, this show brought to you in part by SimpliSafe. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about break-ins ever again. Just go to simplisafe.com/Adam, get all the sensors you need, all the help you need as well to set it up. Custom systems going to show up post-haste at simplisafe.com/Adam. Well, Sid Croft from Sid and Marty Croft are going to join us in the second half. A very interesting gentleman who I've had some words with or about over the years, but we'll see if we can bury the hatchet. First, there's Geico. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Concrete, your body makes half the creatine it needs. The other half comes from your diet, but most American diets are low in creatine-rich foods, and that's where Concrete comes in. Patented creatine, HCL. It's a favorite creatine of elite, well-informed athletes, the number one bioavailable creatine, and the only microdosing creatine. Just one small scoop per 100 pounds of your body weight. Shake it up, and it has a nice lemony flavor to it. You can feel the energy immediately. Creatine is required for functional energy in every cell, and your brain uses about 20% of the creatine in your body. Your immune system needs it. Your heart needs it. Your lungs, all the cells in your body need it. Dr. Drew loves this stuff, and so do I. It is Concrete, right, Dawson?
Take control of your health, both body and mind. Build a better you with Concrete. Register now at con-crete.com/podcast. That's con-crete.com/podcast for a chance to win a $500 Walmart Visa gift card available now online and in-store at Walmart. Concrete is truly life-changing and performance-enhancing.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
People of Earth, it's time for another installment of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month we got things that will take care of your body, soul, and scrotum. Like a sample pack of Tame the Beast Nut Butter, a blend with Tuck Everlasting anti-aging and anti-chafing ingredients that will keep your sack high and tight. We've also got the great Dano's Seasoning, who will make each and every kind of meat taste even better, whether it's beef, pork, or your fellow man. Dano's is low sodium and no sugar, so even Vinny will approve. We've also got Nude Mints to not only freshen your breath, but your gut biome too. These incredible products and a bottle of your choice can be found at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25. So prep your mails box. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived. The Adam Carolla Show presents Sid Croft's Birthday Cocktail Party. For July 30th, let's see who's invited. Hey, look who's here. It's Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's sister, Maria Anna Mozart. The author of Wuthering Heights, Emily Bronte, is here. Automaker and the namesake of the Ford Motor Company, Henry Ford. Former Major League Baseball commissioner, Bud Selig. Let's welcome blues guitarist, Buddy Guy. Hollywood actor and all-around creep, Peter Bogdanovich. A slightly less creepy crooner, Paul Anka, is here. Jimmy Cliff joined the party. Sly's brother, Frank Stallone. Let's welcome Delta Burke, Bill Cartwright, Kate Bush, filmmaker Richard Linklater, actor Lawrence Fishburne, former groundling Lisa Kudrow. Vivica A. Fox is here. Terry Crews joined the party. Filmmaker Christopher Nolan. Tom Green. Hilary Swank.
Swank.
And...
I get you, Corhagen. It's not a tumor.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is back. Sid Croft is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Sid Croft.
Hey, thank you.
Co-creator of Land of the Lost, Sigmund and Sea Monsters, The Banana Splits, Adventure Hour, The Brady Bunch, Variety Hour, H.R. Puffman stuff. It's ubiquitous. Part of my childhood. And yes, I've attacked you openly many times.
But for your art. You want to know something? Adam, I absolutely love it. I'm 100% on your side. And if you give me a minute, because I'm thrilled that this is like an hour show. I got more than an hour.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I should say that I've been invited on your Instagram show, Sundays with Sid, and new episodes are 3 p.m. Pacific time on Sundays, and I would be more than happy to attend.
Well, I've had a lot of big stars on. I've been only on for 2.5 years, and, you know, we got our star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and...
And a Lifetime Achievement Award for Daytime Emmys as well.
And I don't want to, I'm not on an ego trip, but I got to tell you, there were 900 people in Hollywood. It blew me away. I couldn't believe it. You know, that all those people came to see us. But, you know.
Get the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
The star.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been around a long, long time. There's 30 years before Puffin stuff and all that stuff, because maybe this is something that your viewers or your listeners don't know, and that's why I went on Instagram to tell my story, because they only, you know all of our shows. We did 26 television series and 22 specials. And I know, I got to tell you something, Adam, I know millions of people watch you and listen to you. I'm one of them.
Oh
yeah.
Wow.
And I have heard.
Hey,
Adam, I've heard many things where you just ripped us another, you know what?
Like what?
And I'm telling you, 100%. I'm with you.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean you're with me?
Well, the things that you said, I have said. And, you know, people, I got to just go back. You got to give me a minute. Because I said 30 years, I just met you for the first time. And I apologize. I lied. It's 29 years now that I think about it. And I started as a performer. And
yeah.
I know, Adam, that you did a puppet show.
Oh, true.
Remember that?
Shared love of puppets.
Okay, but wait a minute. That's how I started. Well, as a puppeteer.
Well, let's talk about that. You guys grew up in Canada, born in Canada. You took off with the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus at age 16?
No, I was 15 years old.
Oh 15.
Yeah. See, now you're alive. Yeah.
And what was your act with Ringling Brothers back in the day?
I got to tell you something. The first time that I saw a puppet show or a puppet act, it was at a vaudeville theater in Providence, Rhode Island, because in 1938 was the first time that my whole family came from Canada. And we were in a huge hurricane on the East Coast, and everybody on our street didn't make it, but only our family. And so we lost everything. I don't come from a family that knew shit about show business.
What did your dad do?
Nothing. No. You know, that's a whole other story.
But his profession, he wasn't in show business.
No, definitely not. Mm-hmm. And because in 1938, the war started, and my dad used to import grandfather clocks, and he would go from house to house and sell them for $75 and make $5 for each clock, but he'd come back every week. He'd put it in your house free. And then every week he'd come back and collect a buck until, you know, and that was in Boston and Providence before we came to America. Okay, but that has, let's get into show business.
Yeah, people should know Sid and Marty Krupp. You know them from Land of the Lost and Sigmund the Sea Monster and stuff like that. But I forgot that you guys produced a lot of shows. Richard Pryor had a morning show in 84. We were talking about Barbara Mandrell and the Mandrell Sisters the other day. The guys produced that. One of the most insane variety shows ever created.
Brady Bunch.
Pink Lady and
oh,
Jeff.
Oh, yeah. And Jeff.
Jeff Altman was a young stand-up comedian. He was the guy who would always be on Letterman going, big beefy butt steaks with his thing. And then Pink Lady, two Korean, Japanese.
No, Japanese.
Japanese woman
who couldn't speak English.
Who spoke no English.
Nothing.
Oh, like you say what you want about Sonny and Cher, but they spoke the language.
Wow.
Yep. Jeff Altman was sandwiched between two women who did not speak English, and they're doing a variety show.
Do you want to know something? That show is in a time capsule right now as the worst show ever. Which is great. You know,
what an achievement. What an achievement.
It is. Yeah. It is a lifetime achievement.
I watched the shit out of that. I mean, it was probably one season, right?
Yeah.
How did that show come about? And we're going to bounce all over the place.
Okay,
but how do you get Jeff Altman to do?
Fred Silverman, you know, was our hero. Fred Silverman, we were on children's television.
He headed up ABC?
ABC and NBC.
Right. He was a big, big executive.
Okay. We delivered Puff and Stuff, just to get back to Puff and Stuff. I was, after we did that show, the first show, before it aired, I personally, because I created those shows, I was shitting in my pants because I thought, wait a minute, 8 o'clock in the morning, that's all preschool kids, and whoa, it's like, you know, it wasn't about drugs. I wrote Puff and Stuff. That came from Puff the Magic Dragon. That was the big hit. And HR, you know, everybody thought was hand-rolled, and maybe it was, Because, come on, we're talking about the psychedelic.
Let me see how much of that theme song I can sing. HR, Puff and Stuff, who's your friend when things get rough? HR, Puff and Stuff, can't do a little because you can't do enough.
Right. Wow. That is so cool.
And then it went into a whole part where him and Freddie were sailing on a boat, and they landed on an island, and he had a flute that could talk to him. It could have been a bong.
You know, Max Munchnick always thought it was, I can't say.
Sure you can.
No, I can't. Yeah, he thought it was a little phallic symbol.
Uh-huh. Freddie was a talking flute.
Sure.
And Witchy Poo wanted the flute. She was obsessed with the flute.
You know where that all came from? I know we're talking in big circles, but Fred, just to get back to Fred Silverman, Fred Silverman was the head of programming. They were scared to death because we had already done only the costumes for the Banana Split. And we came through. We delivered, because if that show didn't make it, I wouldn't be here talking to you.
Sidebar for Banana Splits.
Yeah.
Which I could easily sing the theme for as well. Tra-la-la-la. All right. The Banana Splits was there was interstitials with the Banana Splits, and then they would throw to filmed things.
Right.
They had Danger Island. They had the Arabian Nights.
Wow, you are so...
That's all I had. I didn't have parents. I didn't have books. I didn't have food. I just had a black and white Zenith TV. I would sit rotting in a decrepit house in North Hollywood. That's all I have. And there were weird battle cries. I haven't heard any of this in a million years. So the Banana Splits would run around and they'd do all this stuff and they'd be in their set and then they'd throw it to Danger Island. And Danger Island was some weird dubbed shot in Puerto Rico or something. There's a kid named Chongo, and they'd go, "Uh-oh, Chongo!" And then I would yell, "Uh-oh, Chongo!" And then there's Arabian Nights where the guy was animated, and the guy goes, "Size of a camel!" And he put his wrists together, and he turned into a camel. What the hell?
Okay,
where did that shit come from?
That was Hanna-Barbera. See,
where was Chongo? Where was Danger Island? Somebody went and filmed that.
Yeah, that's 55 or more years ago. Hey, Adam.
You don't remember any of that.
I remember everything.
But Hanna-Barbera did that. You did the outfits.
This is what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, we had what we called the show business factory. We had puppet shows in all the Six Flag parks. I was the creative head of all the Six Flag parks because we had a puppet theater for the Coca-Cola company. We were there for 9 years. The show would change every year, and we were the number one attraction. So what I'm really getting to, and I'm not on an ego trip, you know,
but you physically made those outfits at the beginning?
Yeah.
And sewed them?
You know why?
Assembled them?
Well, we had a big factory. We had 250 people. It was like a Disney operation with every department, with a huge art department. And that was my office. I was with the artists all day long. And so what happened was, when we finished building all this stuff for Six Flags, I didn't want to let my creative people go, my brother and myself. So we opened up our doors. Six Flags, they financed this for us. We were right behind the Burbank Airport, a city block building, huge, with Puffin stuff up on the top, lit up. Okay, because that was our symbol.
Quick question, just because my mind's all over the place. In a world where, you know, Michael Jordan's rookie jersey is fetching, I think Kobe Bryant's is one for $2.3 million. They're always telling someone's shoes or this is the Raiders of Lost Ark.
All nostalgia.
Pistol. Yeah. You know, I mean, Puffin stuff, there's got to be some rich-ass tech guy who would pay if that – does any of that stuff exist?
We have a huge warehouse. Yeah, a lot of it does. We had a big auction because my brother and myself said, hey, before we leave the planet, and by the way, I'm 93 years old. Yeah, right now. And I'm still working.
All right.
And I'm working on a huge, huge project with David Copperfield right now. It's going to blow the world away. I mean, we've been on it for a year. We're ready in 2 weeks for the world to.
Where's that? Where will we see that?
Las Vegas. Yeah.
So he's going to do something big.
No, he already has a show there. He's had it for 40 years. David Copperfield has an island. He's on his island right now. David Copperfield performs 3 weeks, then he goes to his island, and then he comes back for three. He works 7 days a week.
When he's working.
Sold out. 40 years.
But can you tell us about the project
he's
you're working on?
He's going to make the sea monster disappear. Mm-hmm.
No, shit, I can't tell you nothing. Okay.
All right.
But, hey, you know what? Are we making any sense?
Yes.
We are?
We're all
okay.
Over the road, but
okay,
we're on the road.
Wait a minute, because my mind is clear. To go back to Fred Silverman.
Mm-hmm.
So when we delivered and when that show went on the air, after it went on the first show, the Beatles reached out to us because of Jack Wilde, you know, being in Oliver, being nominated for an Academy Award.
He played the lead in H.R. Puffin.
I found him.
He's a little English guy with a page boy.
I found him. I found Witchy Poo.
Or Cherubic. Yeah, who was Witchy Poo?
That was Billy Hayes.
Yeah, so
and that's another story.
And there's Charles Ellsworth. I want Pink Lady and Jeff stories. You got Chris. Find Pink Lady and Jeff, just so Brian and Gina can freak out.
No, that was the worst. The worst show, because before it went on the air, it was Fred Silverman that saw those two girls in Japan. And Fred came to us and said, they are huge, bigger than the Beatles.
They're like a lounge act in Japan.
They weren't. Okay. They played stadiums.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You know, 100,000 people. And the poor things, you know, couldn't speak a word of English. When they flew them in, they came into our office, and my brother, you know, he's worse than me. He never shuts up. And he was talking to them, and they were bowing and bowing. And then at one point he said, do you understand anything that I'm saying? And they just shook their head no. And we knew. And Fred Silverman gave us 4 weeks because he had an hour spot, and he knew because we came through with Donnie Marie. He wanted Donnie Marie. I said, Fred, let me do a show that the next day everybody at the water cooler is going to say, holy shit, did you see that last night? I said, I want the show to come out of a little tiny box. I want it to be so weird. He said, no, give me Donnie Marie. You know, I want to have Sid Caesar on the first show.
He wanted big in scale.
Well, it wasn't that. But we never had a big budget. You know,
You get Jeff Altman?
That was Fred's idea.
Chris will find the opening or the promo to it or something. It's mind-blowing. I watched it.
No, it's like, it's in a time capsule. Come on. And we don't even know where it's buried, somewhere in Hollywood. So 200 years from now, they're going to say, what the fuck?
It'll be exalted. Yeah. This is what they love.
Yeah.
Here's a 20-second promo of it.
Oh, we are?
They're hotter than The Odd Couple, sunnier than Sonny and Cher. It's me and Keith.
It's Kay.
And Jeff. They're Japan's hottest superstars, Pink Lady, in their American TV debut. He's hit comic Jeff Altman. Pink Lady, a new series coming soon on NBC. You bet.
Super wrestler comes out of the hot tub.
I should be arrested for that. I really should.
I was 11 going, what the fuck is this?
You know, I had the head writer on my show, my Instagram, and I said, who came up with the hot tub? That was the worst fucking idea. And he said, you did. So, oh, God, no way. Well, I was just trying so hard to make that show work. And we had huge guest stars.
Oh, so but those shows would get John Wayne and Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh.
Frank Sinatra and Elvis. They just come walking out in the middle of the show. Dean Martin, you know, here he comes. Like, you could just get any mega celebrity.
You know why? I got to tell you why. Let's go back. When I did my act, I knew that puppets were for little kids. And I'm young. And I knew, gee, how can I, just like my shirt, how can I stand out, you know, and be different? And I'd love to bring it into the adult world. I don't want to have, you know, anything dirty. That wouldn't go. But it's just like David Copperfield took magic, because he was a ventriloquist.
Did not know that.
Yeah. And he'll tell you that he really sucked at being a ventriloquist, because his mouth, you know, opened bigger than Edgar Bergen, you know, was a really bad ventriloquist. But
yeah, but he did ventriloquism on the radio.
On radio, so nobody saw it.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding.
Oh, okay.
Edgar Bergen did ventriloquism on the radio.
On Sunday night. The whole United States.
Candace Bergen's dad.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Fully executed.
All of the United States. That would be like Ed Sullivan. bigger than Ed Sullivan.
Was there at least like a giant audience he was playing to in-house?
Huge.
Okay, so somebody was seeing this.
Yeah, huge.
Wow.
His characters. And in 1937, he introduced Mortimer Snerd. Mm-hmm. And my parents loved that name. And they really, Marty's name is not Marty. And they named him Mortimer after that.
Wow.
That character.
Marty's okay. 7 years younger than you are.
Yeah, whatever.
Something.
Yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I know you were on the lot. I haven't been there in a zillion years. So,
CBS.
So, yeah. So when you said you went into the commissary and
yes.
you weren't sure if you met me, you never met me before.
Oh, I met your brother.
Yeah.
I met somebody.
What a lucky guy. You are. Okay.
We have the hot tub clip from Pink Lady.
Oh, yeah.
Show the hot tub.
Chris has it. It was mind-numbing. Yes. Imagine Jeff Altman. If Jeff Altman didn't turn out to be a
I had
great
him on my
comedian.
Show. You know what he is right now?
He's a rancher.
A magician.
Oh.
Do you
remember him from Letterman?
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh, he was great.
His act.
Hey, Leno, what was his bit?
Man, do this thing on time. He pulled his pants up, huh? He pull him up. Like, I'm your father. Pull my pants. Tagline. The tagline was big beefy butt steaks. Huh?
Oh.
He went, pull my pants up, then he'd know your dad, and then he'd yell big beefy butt steaks. That kind of voice, and people loved it.
They loved him.
The big beefy butt steak. That was his thing.
Yeah, but they didn't love him on our show. Nobody watched our show.
You got to find Altman on Letterman doing big beefy butt steaks, too. Yeah. All right, this is Jeff Altman. What is he, 28? During this?
He's a young comedian, really young.
And he's hot. I mean, Fred Silverman finds him.
At the Comedy Store.
All right, here he is.
Yeah.
You pay me big money and I'm still. Well, I don't know. You know, this always helps change my life. Whoa! Welcome, girls. We've been waiting for you.
Hugh Hefner.
Thank you, Mr. Hefner.
Call me Hef. All my friends do.
He's so cute.
Hey, let's go. Come on.
That's BJ of BJ and the Bear.
Of course.
He was a sitcom where he played a trucker.
Yeah. Show parts in our show.
Yeah.
All right, ladies, thanks.
See you later, Greg. Come on.
It's a cameo within a cameo.
You didn't want to get in, Jeff.
Well, you're not always right. You know, sometimes I get a little spot here on my tux and... hot tub water seems to just take it out just right.
I don't see any spot.
Oh, you don't. Well, thanks so much. Yeah, we got a little spot. Yeah.
Put the mustard on.
Yep. You need a little hot tub water sometime. Come on, girls, what do you say? We just go right on in. Make room for Jeffy, baby. Come on. Oh, yeah, you're going to love it.
Jeff and Hef like and the mama. Playmates are all hanging out.
Take off the time. Yeah, this week I know where I am.
Taking his clothes off.
Delightful.
This is prime time.
What is the biggest star in the back? Hugh Hefner.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, network, ABC.
Yeah.
There's no other. There were three channels.
Wow.
This was one
Fred
of them.
Fred Silverman was fired for that. No, he wasn't. But you know how Donnie Marie happened?
Yeah, no, tell me.
Okay, Donnie Marie. Fred saw Donnie was a huge teeny boppy star.
Yes.
And she was 15. Mm-hmm. And she already had one single.
Paper roses.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were on.
Oh, how real those roses seem.
You know, you don't sing well.
Doing it like Marie. If you wanted my voice, I'd be knocking your socks off right now.
Give up your day job. Okay. So anyway. Fred Silverman saw them on who was the talk show in Philadelphia? Remember that?
Famous Philly native, son of Philadelphia.
I never knew where anything was. I would watch.
No.
Mike Douglas. Yes.
Philadelphia.
All right.
There you go.
I'll take some credit. So, I didn't know he was out of Philly.
So Fred called me and said, I saw these two kids. I'm going to send the tape over. and I want you to see this. We were only on kid shows. We never did a nighttime show. As a matter of fact, everybody out there, we didn't know shit about even producing a show. Puff and Stuff, we did it at Paramount in a soundstage next to Lucy. You know, and the Brady Bunch. They
I've seen the plaque.
Yeah, they were across the street.
The Godfather 2 is two stages down.
So anyway, he said, take a look. I took a look. I called him right back. I said, Fred, you saw me with Judy Garland at the Greek Theater. I was on tour with her opening act, her whole national tour, first
was
tour.
She difficult?
Oh, that's another show.
Well, okay. Write it down, Jim.
I have to know.
We'll okay. get into that. All right, but keep going her. With Fred.
Okay, I'm going with Fred. So I said, okay, Judy Garland, you saw me. I work with Mickey Rooney. I was on tour with him in vaudeville. Because I was in vaudeville, burlesque, the circus. Hey, Ringling Brothers Circus, not to get off track, the Big Top sat 15,000 people.
Wow.
We played where the Grove is for 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and we did 30,000 people a day. I was in the freak show, in the sideshow, as the world's youngest puppeteer. Another really weird, weird story. The strangest part
Marvel
of my
the
whole
boy
life.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I said, hey, Fred, Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland in the 40s, they were the boy and girl next door. They did Let's Put On a Show. I said, Fred, that's who Donnie and Marie are. And he said, bingo, let's do it. Let's do it. So he said, in 2 days, would you fly to Provo and show them a rundown? I said, shit, you're only giving me 2 days? And, you know, the opening, if you remember, it was all ice skaters.
Yes.
Remember that? Not dancers?
Yes.
Well, next to Radio City Music Hall in 1949 was Center Theater. It was the sister theater of Radio City. And Sonia Henie, for 9 years, had her huge spectacle.
Famous ice skater. Mm-hmm.
And every year they would change, you know. And I was there the last year. And I went from making $50 a week in Ringling to making $125 a week. Chorus, there were 150 people in the show. But Chorus got $35, even on Broadway in those days. That's what Chorus would make.
I can sing. I'm a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock and roll.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. I'm a little, their whole, I think every show they would do.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, you can find it. It's Donnie, who was rock and roll.
Oh, sure.
And she was country.
She was country. And then she'd go, mm-hmm. I'm a little bit country. And then he'd go, I'm a little bit rock and roll. Got a little bit of something Nashville, and then he'd go, a little bit of Motown in my soul. Don't know if it's good. Then it's coming together. Don't know if it's good or bad, but we know we love it. So I'm a little bit country,
cultural
and I'm a little bit rock and roll. And then they would license some Jimi Hendrix song or something, and he'd do some peppy version of All Along the Watchtower or something.
What?
With all due respect, no one has more or less Motown soul than Donnie Marie Osmond.
Well, Donnie's is still in Vegas. You know, I had
I'm
him on my show.
Talented.
I've had a lot of huge stars. You know who reached out just a couple of weeks ago is Katie Couric.
Oh, my.
She watches my show. And so does Anderson Cooper.
We will play see how close
are you
I
playing,
got to it. Yeah.
I hope you got the ice skaters in it.
Well, we'll do.
Just a quick montage.
And I'm a little bit rock and roll.
Clearly.
Oh. It's weird. I couldn't remember the part of the song, and I still don't understand what the fuck she's saying. And that
was the closing of the first half after this. Before the second commercial.
Would John Wayne and Frank Sinatra and people like that, Ringo Starr, like show up on the, everyone showed up on those shows, right?
Yeah, well, when we did DC Follies, that was life-size puppets of all, hundreds and hundreds of stars, but we would have three guests on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had some big people. They would call us, except Sinatra was going to sue us. He hated his puppet. Yeah.
What?
Oh, I got a great Sinatra story. When I did my act, and he was married to Ava Gardner, I was on tour in Europe. I just closed at the Lido in Paris for a year.
Doing the puppet act.
Yeah. Oh, I was huge.
How does one go about that? Are you talking? Are you singing? Are you
It's all music. My act was 18 to 22 minutes long, and no one had ever seen anything like it. It wasn't in a stage.
Are you marionetting it?
Yeah. They're 3 feet tall. I mean, I had a stripper in my act that took 9 pieces of clothing off, and not only took them off with her hand, but put them down and left them,
The marionette.
Yeah, the marionette. There it is. Yeah.
You have quite the dexterity for all of that.
The best part of my act was the music. Yeah. I played the Coconut Grove a zillion times. I played the Greek
Theater. Went down on Sunset? Was that Coconut Teasers or Coconut
Grove? No, Coconut Grove.
Give me
a break.
The word coconut
at the Ambassador
it.
Hotel. You had to come on a Tuesday night in a tuxedo.
Is there
and
a Bobby
women
Kennedy
came
shot?
In yeah. evening gowns. Mm-hmm. No flip flops.
Oh. So, sorry, Sinatra.
Okay, Sinatra. I, in my act, just to go back, if you listen to his recording of The Road to Mandalay, there's a huge gong in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my act used to start off with, I never allowed an MC, whoever I followed, blackout. And off stage, he would just say, "Ladies and gentlemen, the unusual artistry of Sid Croft." And I traveled with this huge gong. I own the biggest gong in the world, okay? and they would hit the gong, and that's the way, and get everybody's attention. It would vibrate through the theater or club, whatever. Okay, so anyway, he borrowed it from me, because you'll hear my gong, right? And we became friends, and he did, we worked together and all that stuff. And when we did DC Follies, he hated the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And so his lawyers wanted to sue us. Yeah. And so we just took it off. Yeah. And it happened a couple of times with other stars. Okay. I'm in. Now let's go. I'm in Madrid. And I'm playing in a club called Rex or something like that. And it was the only club in all of Spain that wasn't a whorehouse, because all the clubs, it was dictatorship. In order to be a whore, you had to be registered and be in the show. No talent or talent.
Yeah,
and so,
Pink Lady.
Pink Lady. So anyway, Ava Gardner, but this club was classy. Caviar, champagne, violin.
But still whores?
No.
Please. All right, sorry.
And Ava Gardner was shooting a movie. She came in every night. It was the only club to go to, and to see my show. And I'd always sit out at her table. But every night she'd come in with a bullfighter, famous bullfighter.
Mm-hmm.
And she was married to Sinatra.
Right.
Sinatra came over to make her come home because he was so in love with Ava Gardner. And I witnessed in that club the bullfight. They, you know, had a big fight, and the bullfighter just creamed, because Sinatra was skinny, little, short guy, and just creamed him. He ended up in the hospital. And so
Ava Gardner is one of the best-looking people
on the
born.
Planet. Yeah, and one of the real, beauties.
In real life, she must have been exquisite.
Hedy Lamarr, Ava Gardner, Sid Charisse. I mean, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So you witnessed Sinatra getting punched out by a bullfighter.
Yes, I did. How about that?
And in more recent news, we have a clip of Jeff Altman.
Again?
Letterman doing the big beefy butt steak.
Good, because I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know either. I don't know what his bit was, but he did Dad pulling the pants up and big beefy butt steak.
Really
he's
good.
Such a cool guy.
Boy, I'm so good.
What's the matter?
Do you see a little fly or a parakeet in my nose right now?
There's nothing. Sit down. There's nothing.
There's a bat. There's a big bat in my nose.
There's not a nose. Just sit down. There's nothing in your nose. Sure. Small pair of pliers.
There's a pliers
no,
in
there's
mine,
no pliers. Yeah. How are you? You look good. You look like you just had a meal.
Just had a big meal, Dave.
What do you have? When you go out, what do you have?
Oh, a butt steak. I'll have a 20-pound butt steak. Just a, you know, not no garnish, no fries, just a 22-pound butt steak.
Yeah, and
yep, a butt steak.
Well, hold on a second. Now, I don't know how does one construct an entire comedy act on just a butt steak, a big beefy. You guys think I'm kidding when I or exaggerating?
Sure.
He said butt steak 11 times.
Yeah, and he just sat down.
I don't know what it said.
He's kind of doing stick, like, but not really.
All right,
like,
let's watch him. Let's see if he keeps going.
It didn't.
This is the end of the cow.
Yeah, I see. You're not talking about a flank steak that a guy would roll up or anything, are you?
Flank?
Yeah. Would it be like...
It's a butt steak! Okay. A big, big butt steak!
He's not really getting big laughs.
I don't know why.
How do you like that, Cook? That?
Well, a lot of the kids, I go over to the kids' house, they'll offer me, nachos and that crap, but I don't eat that. Just want a 22-pound butt steak!
Oh, no way.
You see a hamburger?
You should have workshopped this.
What character is this?
So you had a pretty good
His
meal.
His dad?
Oh, great. Yeah. Delicious.
Yeah.
Can we get serious?
My guess is that this is some inside joke from back in their comic days. That doesn't make any sense to anyone else.
It must.
Because Dave's laughing his ass off. And they're like, what the fuck
he's
is this?
Nervous. No, Dave's a friend of his. Uh-huh. Dave goes back, and Dave's covering because he would book him all the time, and even later in Letterman years when there was no reason at all to book Jeff Altman, he would have him on because he was an old school comedy store guy. I think Dave is nervously sort of laughing over him, but he would do the butts.
It's not even a punchline. It's like a catchphrase.
At some point, he pulls his pants up and does this
big beefy butt steak.
Now you thought that was part of his act. His entire act is talking about big beefy butt steaks. Is there
he
any
just
more?
Likes how it sounds. He likes the alliteration.
It's like 2 minutes or 3 minutes later. They call back.
Does he stand up? Pull the pants up? Is that his?
Why do you want to show more? Why are you?
That's a great question.
I am so intrigued by life.
Yeah, me too. Oh my God, me too. You know what? Mm. I tell everybody out there, my whole career, I don't know where I got it from, I've gone left because everybody goes right. If you go to Maui, which I lived there for 8 years, on the way to Hana, that little skinny road, nobody goes left.
They go
right at the fork. Go left because you're going to find something. My whole career has been like that because that's why I'm wearing this shirt. I wanted to be different. I wanted, even when I was a little tiny kid, I wanted to get attention because I didn't have it from my mom and dad or I didn't grow up with my brothers. I don't even know Marty. I really don't.
But you guys collaborated for so many projects.
Okay. Because Marty came out here, I lost my assistant who got a better job.
What was Marty's field of expertise?
Car salesman. Yeah. concept.
Well, wait, every show you did was... Oh, not sorry. Not
okay,
every show.
You know
there were
how
a lot of puppets.
Happened.
A lot of big,
that's
beefy,
me.
Butsy puppets.
Well,
your
come on.
Brother didn't contribute in that?
No, he's not a puppeteer. When I went to Europe, he took my old act without even asking me. He Ooh. Took it and my old music. My music was awesome.
Who
it was
wrote
better
those
than
songs?
Not songs. It was all music. Henry Mancini.
Oh, yeah. Ever heard of him?
Yeah. His arranger.
Wait, so...
And my music, the band used to wait for me to come back.
It was all
only
original.
Because of my music. It was awesome.
So you had Henry Mancini pre-Pink Panther days.
His arranger, yeah.
So, wait a minute. How are you with your... Brother, is he still alive?
Oh, yeah.
All right. You guys speak?
Not really, but it's fine. You know,
I'm trying to drill down on.
Okay, you can drill down. I don't like rehashing. I don't like, you know, even when they make movies and a great, great movie, and then they bring it back. And I mean, like our movie that we did with Will Ferrell, Lands of the Lost, I had nothing to do with it. You know, it was the studio, it was $200 million, which means nothing. Hey, Adam, I got to tell you something. Puffin Stuff costs $56,000 an episode. And Lands of the Lost might have been $60,000. And look what you saw on the screen. And I was haunted by budget constantly. And, you know, and I said, hey, creativity is hard to come by. And we both know that, you know.
Well, for certain, not Jeff Altman. He came up with big
Well, that wasn't
things.
My fucking
no,
idea.
Give me a break. I'm curious in the dynamic that you had with your brother. And
it was never friendly.
But you know? But so you hear this a lot. There's many acts, you know, I hate Kimmel's guts. Mm-hmm. There's acts famously don't get along
right.
creatively.
No, I don't. Yeah.
At some point. Yeah. But for me, it was always Sid and Marty Krofft from the mind of Sid and Marty Krofft. Sid
you know
and
why?
Marty Krofft.
OK, yes. Let me stop you for a sec. We're at the Polo Lounge. Les Poupées de Paris was the biggest puppet show ever produced in the world. And it was at the Seattle World's Fair. And it took 3 months to install the machinery, the stage. There, you know, it was a tits and ass. It was for adults only. You had to be 21. That was the gimmick.
What year was this?
1962, yeah.
And in Seattle, did he say?
Yeah.
Is that when Elvis filmed the movie out there?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Keep going.
And then Les Poupées de Paris played at the New York World's Fair in its own theater. Huge, huge. 9 years that show ran. It played a puppet show, played to 9.5 million people. But you had to be 21. Okay. You know, I work with Gypsy Rose Lee in burlesque, and I love in the Broadway show, you got to have a gimmick.
If you want to get a job.
You got to have a gimmick,
you
right?
You got to get one has a trumpet, and one,
yeah.
Yep.
Well, right from the beginning of my career, you got to have a gimmick for everything that you do. That's, you know, I was a one-man show. I still am, in
Well,
a
so
way.
Your brother.
My brother does, he's brilliant. Does the business.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the creative. He's creative, too, because, hey, you learn, don't you? I mean, when you're around, we had a horseshoe up our butt because we had the best people wanted to work for us because I am fucking insane. Yeah. Yeah.
Grab that.
You know.
So you were designing, constructing, and doing all the puppet stuff, and yeah. He was driving all the deals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And still, you know. But rehashing, you know, I know I watched a show that you did talking about us because we had Croft the Con, you know.
Right, the convention.
Yeah. And, you know, and you weren't even sure if we were going to be there. You think we're rich. That's bullshit.
Oh, not rich.
No.
Well, wait a minute.
That's another story.
There, you can.
I don't do drugs.
I never thought that per se.
Yeah.
I felt like I had done drugs from watching some of your material.
Well, that was my deal.
But
I wanted you.
Do we?
Hey, you know what? I'm sorry, Adam. I started to say earlier on today that little kids, it was for little kids, right? But I knew that adults in those days sat with their kids on Saturday morning.
Uh-huh.
If an adult laughs and the kid doesn't know what the fuck they're laughing at, they're going to laugh with them, right?
Right, of course.
Yeah. And so why did the Beatles order a new, as soon as every show came off the press, they wanted it. Why?
They wanted it before it aired.
Yeah. And because they were locked in their hotel rooms, they just loved Puff and Stuff.
You got to play England, the opening to that.
Okay,
one.
But Puff and Stuff in England was on at night at 7 o'clock.
Ah, because of the star?
No, because we were against Bonanza, and we took the time period. Yeah, because
well, the star was the English kid who played Oliver.
Oh yeah,
right?
He was. I saw him in Oliver. I knew Lionel Bart, who
was a very cute, charming, talented little kid.
Wow, you got some great engineers in there.
He's the best.
This is unbelievable.
Let's see.
HR Puff and Stuff. Who's your friend when things get rough? HR Puff and Stuff. Can't do a little because you can't do enough.
Once upon a summertime, just a dream from yesterday, a boy and his magic golden flute.
You got a picture of me at age 10 watching this.
Come and play with me, Jimmy, come and play with me, and I will take you on a trip far across the sea.
Yeah, but the waves start getting rough, Gina.
Oh, boy.
Belonged to a cookie or witch who had in mind a flute to snitch. From her broom broom in the sky, she watched her friends materialize. She waved her wand, the beautiful boat was gone. The sky grew dark, the seas grew rough, and the boat sailed on and on and on and on and on and on.
This is 55 years ago.
Two and knew exactly what to do. He saw the witch's boat attack, and as the boy was fighting back,
he called his rescue ranger, who was off and they
flew to going.
And off to save the boy they flew.
But who would get there first?
But now the boy had watched.
Is this the intro?
Yes, it's still going.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Which made the witch so mad at so
told the whole story.
Yeah, the whole exposition.
Now.
HR Puff and Stuff. Who's your friend when things get rough? HR Puff and Stuff. Can't do a little because you can't do enough.
HR Puff and Stuff.
Still going.
Oh, yeah. We used to have openings to shows.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, you had a band.
Oh, yeah, the
I
Boyd.
Forgot the band.
The Boyd. The Boyd. Sharon Baird.
One of them was kind of modeled after Mama Cass. Am I right?
Well, no, Mama Cass was in the movie. She was my neighbor. And Mama Cass.
In what movie?
The Puffin Stuff movie.
I didn't know there was a Puffin Stuff movie. Yeah.
You are so out of touch, Adam.
<know. laughs> What year did the Puffin Stuff movie come out?
1970. It was Universal. We wrote in a new character, Boss Witch,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted Betty Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And she had an ad in the trades that she was looking for a job.
Betty Davis did.
What?
Yeah. And so I called her. I got her phone number. I called Mae West. When you're on my show, she was a really good friend of mine.
I still want to hear about Judy Garland.
Okay.
Oh,
and
my
Judy Garland.
God.
I mean, just give me a name and I'll tell you a story. Okay. I've been around. I've been around since Lincoln was the president. I was here. Yeah. Okay, Adam. So, what were we talking
about?
Betty
Davis.
Betty Davis. So, I got her phone number. I called her. And I said, you know, we're doing a Universal movie, Puff and Stuff. She said, I never heard of it. And she said, what's the part? And I said, Boss Witch. And she said, you want me to play a witch? Go fuck yourself, and hung up. So I wrote her, I hand wrote her a letter, mm-hmm. you know, never heard back from her, you know. And so we ended up with my great, great friend from back in the early 50s, Martha Ray.
Martha Ray.
Like, and okay. the Vandellas? Who am I talking about?
No.
Martha Ray. Okay.
Martha Ray, the comedian.
You're thinking of...
A million movies.
I gotta see.
Martha and the Vandellas, but no. I don't think her last name... No, you're thinking of Martha Ray was...
The comedian.
Comedian who was famous from the 70s for doing... denture adhesive commercials.
Yeah, but no, she was in a lot of movies, big musicals.
Well, that's how you get the denture. Yeah, they actually get the polygrip.
Martha Ray had a club in Miami. I used to play the Bardeville Theater.
So let me just say this in a more surreal. You can find Martha Ray doing polygrip or whatever. Here's what happened.
Martha Ray did Benita Bazaar in The Bugaloos.
How dare you?
Oh, you guys must have. Do you guys do the. No, the Bugaloos was out of England, right?
No.
That
that's
was yours?
My, of
but
course.
Weren't they English?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not that far.
Well, because we had such a success.
So here's the thing that's weird about life. And we're all hope, God willing, you'll enter this stage one day. Martha Ray, to me, is the Polydent spokesperson. She's not a celebrated 50s comedian.
Right.
She was something.
Right.
Oh, she's huge. Yeah.
But she's selling Polydent.
Right.
And Agnes Moorhead is Endora from Bewitched,
that's right.
not a big star
that's right.
of Broadway.
Right.
And
trotting the boards.
For many, Phil Rizzuto worked for the Money Store. That's a Brian reference. Yeah, gotcha. We don't know he's an all-star Yankee.
Yeah.
So. It depends when you're around.
That's right.
So the problem is you hang around too long, you have to get work, and that comes in Polydent commercials.
And that's how we remember you.
And then
wait a minute. Right. When I approached her, she said to me, she was a big star.
She has two stars on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
It says here.
Okay. Martha Ray, when I approached her, and she was a great friend of mine, when I'd played at the Bardeville Theater in Miami, we'd go out every night.
Mm-hmm.
And Benita Bazaar was really written for Martha Ray in The Bugaloos. Do you remember that?
I remember The Bugaloos. The Bugaloos. We're
in the air and everywhere.
Flying high, flying free. Nowhere else we'd rather be. The Bugaloos. There was weird English bumblebee. Group.
You know, Lionel Bart, who wrote Oliver and the script and the music, was also a friend of mine. And that's how I found Jack Wilde, because Lionel Bart called me from England.
He's the Oliver guy.
Yeah. And which won 11.
Oliver.
It won 11 Academy Awards. Yeah. It was huge.
All right. So... Judy, wait a minute. You had Mama Cass Elliott.
Okay, Mama Cass lives at the bottom of my hill where when I moved into my house, I've been there 50 years, I built it, and she's at the very bottom of my hill. After she passed away, Ringo Starr lived there, now Beverly D'Angelo.
You know, wow.
And they all became, we were close neighbors, so we all became friends. But Mom and Cass never made a movie before. And she was handled by, wait a minute. What was his name?
Doesn't matter.
No, it's, yeah.
The big name?
Yeah. He produced.
Swifty Lazar.
No, he produced the Academy Awards. Alan Carr.
Yeah, who's married to somebody.
And I said,
Betty White? No.
And I wanted, Mama Cass never acted or never did a movie before, but she used to come up to my house every night to have dinner. Loved eating.
Even when you weren't there.
Yeah, even when. Yeah. Are you done yet? Yeah.
So you made her cast her as boss
witch. No, Witch Hazel.
Oh, I see what you did
there. The boss witch ended up being Martha Ray.
Oh, the great.
You got to watch the movie. The movie, if you love acid trips, watch the movie.
Is there a trailer for that movie?
Oh, yeah.
All right, we got to get to Judy Garland before we bring this home.
Wow.
You toured with Judy.
For almost a year and a half. And the last engagement was at the Fontainebleau in Miami. And that's when Marty joined me as my assistant. And so I gave up my act. That was 1957. And I gave up my act in 1959 after 19 years of doing it. And then Les Poupées de Paris, which really put us on the map.
Was Judy Garland difficult?
Not with me. I loved, I was very, very close to her. I had my own dressing room. I used to dress with her, because we loved laughing. She loved sick jokes. But the only difficult thing about Judy Garland is her life was so intense that, there were shows where she didn't want to perform. That wasn't important to her. And they were, they were not wealthy. They didn't have that much money. And
the girl from Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Yeah. But Judy Garland, the best stories. I worked with Liberace.
Oh, yeah.
For many, many years. I knew him in 1952. That's the best
stories.
Was
he openly gay in the inner circle that everyone know?
No, if that movie, I got to tell you, that movie that they made.
Behind the Candelabra.
Yeah. I wrote a letter to the Times, but it didn't print. And to the editor, that was not Liberace. Of course, he was a hidden, but Liberace was the coolest, but he lived totally in his own world. If you said, Lee, the queen died. And he knew the queen because we did a command performance. But I'm using the wrong
metaphor.
It was about his costumes, his act. He loved the stage.
They made him out to be quite the narcissistic egomaniac.
He wasn't at all. You could never question him about things like that. He would sue you. He didn't have a publicist. He was the publicist. He had a manager. He was so brilliant as a performer. Yeah.
I hope you've chronicled all this in a book somewhere.
I'm right now I'm doing a documentary. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where might we find this documentary when it's completed?
Well, as you know, you wrote many books. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time.
Are you making it for somebody or are you going to make it on spec?
No, we're making it for a big company. Yeah. I am, yeah. It's just my life. It's got nothing, very little to do with Puff and Stuff and all. Because I told you, there's 29 years of the most, I'm still alive. The most incredible stories, old Hollywood. I played at Earl Carroll's.
I don't know who that is.
Okay, across the street from the Palladium, that beautiful building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Earl Carroll's
Vanities. I worked, you name it, with huge, huge stars all over the world. The stories I have. And you're coming on my show?
Yes.
To be continued.
All right. Well, let me hit this spot. Boy, my head's ringing.
Really? Did I do that?
Well, it's, you know, it's, it, the story, yes, you did. Because, you know,
I meant to. I'm sorry. I picked
up your story in 1975, but I didn't know anything before that.
1940.
Is when
I was performing, 1940, in vaudeville.
Is there any
burlesque.
Is there any puppet business now? Is that any part of show business? I mean,
yeah, aside, like crank anchors on the air.
What are you?
I mean,
are
like
you
live
kidding?
Performance.
The Muppets.
Well, I was going to ask, you must have known Jim Henson.
Yeah, Marty is the one that told Jim Henson, put your name above. Everybody thinks we're the Muppets. You know,
right.
Put your name on it. And just to, in closing, how it came to be Sid and Marty Croft, it was always Sid Croft. Sid Croft. And then when we put our company together, it was the Croft, Les Poupées de Paris was the Croft Theater mm-hmm. Presents. It was all bullshit, story behind it. Fifth generation, there was nothing like that. Okay, a publicist did all that shit. Okay, so what happened was, we're at the Polo Lounge. Les Poupées de Paris just opened in the Seattle World's Fair, and Billy Graham came to the opening because it was sponsored by the fair. They paid for it in an unbelievable theater. I had the whole audience on a turntable. Wow. It was unreal before Disney did it, Disneyland. Okay, so anyway, Billy Graham... The big thing of Les Poupées de Paris, you're talking about a puppet show, is after this spectacle, it was an hour, we invited the whole audience to come back and see the piece of machinery and the girls, all naked puppets, tits and ass. The girls getting dressed, leaving the theater and all. You know, it was just amazing. So we invited Billy Graham, and he stormed out of the theater. First show, opening show. And that night he had a rally, 100,000 people, and because Kennedy was supposed to cut the ribbon. But Billy Graham, something happened, Kennedy didn't show up. So Billy Graham said, the fair is unbelievable. Come from all over the world. Seattle is the most beautiful city. But don't go see a show called Les Poupées de Paris because the women... don't wear bras.
That's
well,
the best
shit.
Endorsement oh, you could ever get.
Come on, Time Magazine, you forget it. You know, boom, we went through the roof. And my
oh, that's
my
just don't
theater,
eat a Chick-fil-A.
Right.
That's the modern-day version of that.
If you came, I couldn't even get you into my theater because the fair, they held the tickets. Okay, and we did five shows a day. It was always sold out. So anyway, we come back. Because I was on Johnny Carson or some show. No.
Mike Douglas.
No.
Dinah Shore.
No, it was... what's
Pink
his
Lady
name?
And Jeff.
No, before Johnny Carson. Jack Parr.
Jack Parr. Yeah.
I hate interviews because you don't have time to talk. You have 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what do you talk about? And so anyway, and thank you for... You know, I was looking forward to today.
Just a longer format than Jack Parr.
Because, Adam, I was like, and you can ask Kelly, who's with me, my assistant, creative assistant. And so I was looking forward to today because I was like an old little kid, you know. Oh, my God.
What?
Yeah, we got
I'm going to take you on a trip.
We got Puff and Stuff swag. Thank you.
This is awesome. Nice. These tie-dyed hoodies.
Oh, no. You guys forgot one of the HR Puff and Stuff. They had like angry mushrooms.
And on the back, look at the back.
Yes.
It's
yes.
My shirt.
Yes.
On the bottom.
All right.
Okay, but okay, this is important before you cut me off the air.
Please.
I mean, we're 5 minutes over.
Go ahead.
And we're at the Polo Lounge. Tony Martin and Sid Charisse were like our moms and dads because I toured with Tony. I played Vegas with him and a whole bunch of stuff. okay, and we're having lunch, and Walt Disney is sitting at the next table. I am pissing in my pants. I never met him, right? And Walt Disney gets up and he comes over to say hello to Sid and Tony. Marty and myself were at the table. And, of course, they introduce. He said, oh, yeah, I heard of you guys. I heard about your show in Seattle. And I'm going, but, you know, I'm going to go see it. Can I give you some advice? And we look at each other. Are you Walt Disney?
What year? Is this 63?
Yeah, he died in 65. So it was like 62, mm-hmm. 3, something. I lose track of time. I have senior moments. Okay. So anyway, he said, always put your name above everything that you create because someday it'll be worth something. Right? It said the Croft Theater. The world famous Croft Theater. It was not world famous. On top of the marquee, right? And so my publicist here in L.A. who really made Les Poupées de Paris famous, I told him the story, and he said, shit, brothers, I can sell that. Brothers are stronger than, you know, the Croft Theater, you know, doesn't mean anything. So he, you know, with Hedda Hopper and Luella Parsons, who gave us every week, gave us big, but brothers, Sid and Marty Croft, Sid. And so we pounded it into everybody's head.
It's good lore.
26 shows, Sid and Marty Croft. And, you know, they repeat the shit out of the shows.
Yeah.
On kids, you know, over and over. And they grew up. Go to Comic-Con with me. These are adults. And they come scared. Up. And they come up.
I would be.
We do a panel.
I would be
every
gang
year.
Raped if I showed up with you.
Really?
Amongst your fans. Yeah. I would say I would.
No, that's that. What they
I would
cry.
Need a lot of security.
I need a lot of security. They cry and they want to touch you. Look at you. That's 50. You know the lyrics?
I think
why?
I would know more
than
lyrics.
But why? Why well, did you knock the shit out of my show?
This is
why?
A combination. Well, for me, there's a little, I'm on the spectrum of a few different, you know, illnesses.
Afflictions.
I grew up in a vacuum of entertainment. Yeah. I did not have eye contact with my family. All I have is I do have a sort of idiot savant memory for song lyrics, per se.
I heard that about you.
I can pull out stuff from 50 years ago that it could be a Pete Ellis Dodge commercial. I can remember the jingle. I couldn't remember what
but
I read.
How brilliant, Adam. That's what blows me away.
Yes,
it really did today. I mean, you knew every single word of all. That's what. How many shows do you know the lyrics of that is 55 years old?
All I got is Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
Your creative endeavors impacted me.
Really?
Yes.
Thank you. That's a big compliment coming from you.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
I didn't
much.
Say if it's negative or positive. Yeah. I just said it was a very big impact. Look, what you are and what you created is forever stuck in my head.
Now, a lot of people out there.
Yes. I can picture all these people. I can see Charles Nelson Reilly right now.
He's another one that said to me, Sid, I love you. Don't fuck up my career. He gave us a hard time. Don't make me do a kid
Charles
show.
Charles was kind of at the end of, he was heading off the Match Game and stuff
yeah, but
like
you
want
to know something? That character, Hoodoo, that was became his character on Johnny Carson, on all the shows. He was doing Hoodoo. You know, he was brilliant. Hated coming to work. He called it the Croft, I don't know, Nazi camp or something.
Crematorium.
Yeah.
We'll use alliteration.
Whatever it was.
All right. We didn't even get to Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
Oh, my God.
Followed a few short years later by the Patti LaBelle Show.
That's wow.
Right. Hey, Adam.
A lot of range.
Would you have me back?
I would have you back. God.
I love doing this.
Guest of the year is done. Everyone else go home.
My favorite shirt.
This hoodie is the best.
Sid,
thank you.
I will be happy to come on your show, which is Sundays with Sid.
At 3 o'clock. You can do it from your home.
Pacific time every Sunday and on Instagram at Sid
Adam,
Croft. Yes.
Where do you live?
I live in La Cañada, California, and sometimes Malibu. I'll make it to your house.
You got to come. I built my house.
I love.
You got to give it a once over.
Yes.
I have a tree house.
You be prepared, though. I can critique. I don't know if you know that side of me, but sometimes I'm judgmental about people's art.
I love it.
Well, this
people
is
people are afraid to do that for some reason, and I like the truth.
Years in the making, Sid Croft. Everyone, thank you, and I will see you on your show. You can go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Sid Croft, Gina Grand, Bob Bryan. Say it. Mahalo.
I am fucking insane.
Pick up your copy of Adam's new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something. It's available everywhere. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see the Ace Man right now at AdamCarolla.com.
The Jordan Harbinger Show, a different kind of sponsor for this episode, the Jordan Harbinger Show. Well, if you're a fan of fascinating podcasts and interesting people, you should definitely check this one out. There's an episode for everyone, no matter what you're into. Jordan talks with Scott Adams about persuasion in a world where facts don't matter anymore. Man, is he right. Or you go inside the dark world of wildlife trafficking. You'll always find something useful to apply to your own life, like routine changes to boost productivity or slight mindset tweaks to change how you see the world. Jordan's a good guy. We've had him on many times. I know the man well, and he's worth a listen. We enjoy the show, and we know you will, too. So you can search The Jordan Harbinger Show. That is H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Saddle up and get ready for Westerns Weeks on Pluto TV, all for free. We're coming in blazing with favorites like True Grit and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Or immerse yourself in binge-worthy series like Yellowstone and Walker, Texas Ranger. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. The best part? It's free. No credit card, no sign-up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now.